I'm Arun Venugopal, in for Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. Glad to have you with us. Across the world, there is a growing sense of alarm over the spread of the new coronavirus. As of today, the virus, which originated in China, has infected at least 4,500 people and killed more than 100. China has implemented a broad series of travel restrictions that includes a reduction of flights and trains to the mainland. They've also placed bans on travel visas. However, the virus has spread to at least a dozen other parts of the world, including Thailand, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Australia, Singapore, Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, and France. Here in the U.S., roughly 110 people have been evaluated for the coronavirus, and so far, 5 people have tested positive. As fears over the virus continue to spread, it raises new questions about how prepared countries around the world are, not just for this virus, but for the next pandemic as well. For more on this, I'm joined by Matthew Kavanaugh. He is an assistant professor of global health and director of the Global Health Policy and Governance Initiative at Georgetown University. Matt, welcome to The Takeaway.
Arun, thanks for having me.
Also on the line, we have Sean Lee, a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She is currently under quarantine in China's Hubei province. Hi, Sean.
Hi, nice to be here.
Sean, you fled Wuhan, where the outbreak started a few days ago, along with millions of other people, correct? What was that experience like?
It was a really, really chaotic day. They announced the lockout in the early mornings of Thursday, and I found out because my editor woke me up at 3 a.m. in the morning. I ended up running to the train station originally to interview people, and then ended up taking one of the final trains out of the city to Beijing when I realized I didn't have enough protective gear. It was just a kind of a scene of chaos at the train station as people woke up to the news that if they didn't get out by 10 a.m., they weren't going to get out of the city.
What is the part of Hubei province that you're in right now look like?
So I'm in a city called Xiangyang. It's about 200 miles northwest of Wuhan. It is also under lockdown, which is part of the reason why we're stuck here, my colleague and I. It's basically like any second tier city. And right now there's just very few cars on the roads. There's very few people walking outside, which is quite unusual for Lunar New Year, which is when millions of people, you know, travel home to visit family, and it should be a really joyous time of the year. But now everyone's just staying at home for fear of being infected.
And you've been told to monitor your health constantly, right, by taking your temperature and the like?
Every 4 hours, and we're reporting it to local authorities in case we might be infected as well. We're under quarantine for 14 days.
How effective has the Chinese government's response been to the coronavirus so far?
I think that's a matter of a lot of debate. So obviously, China wants to be seen as a global leader in world health, but you can see just in the hospitals in Wuhan, they're just being besieged by patients. They're really overwhelmed. Hospitals are taking to social media to plead for basic medical and protective gear like face masks. And there's a lot of questions about whether the healthcare system in China can handle it and whether the overall system, if there's enough transparency to handle an outbreak like this, whether the government is disclosing information in a timely manner to the Chinese people.
Matt, how well do you think the Chinese government has responded to the virus?
You know, it's interesting. There's, as was said, a lot of debate. One of the things we know is that authoritarian regimes can kind of have pluses and minuses, right? And so the Chinese regime, for example, is able to lock down 56 million people, close down cities, able to build hospitals in a week or two. That's remarkable, and that's the remarkable amount of control that's shown by an authoritarian regime. But at the same time, information flows have been really challenged, right? So one of the things we've noticed is that the information coming out of China has often been wrong, right? The earliest cases were far earlier than originally reported. A lot of the cases were not linked to the market that was reported. There was human-to-human contact transmission way earlier. It's far deadlier than we thought at first, not just for the sick and the elderly. So a lot of that information has been flowing really poorly. And that's actually explained often by, an authoritarian regime where people are afraid to share information. It discourages local officials from raising bad news with their central bosses. The lack of transparency and media results in a lack of trust. So a lot of those information flows are actually really not working nearly as well as they should be.
Sean, what are conditions like for the residents affected by these lockdowns? Are they getting the supplies they need?
In Wuhan, at least, a lot of you see that people are sheltering in place. So there's a lot of uncertainty about when the lockdown is going to end. So they've been rushing to supermarkets to clear out shelves of food and water and basic sort of like face masks, gloves, things like that. It depends on elsewhere. Like under cities like partial lockdown, like Xiangyang where I am, there's still people who can kind of go out and about, and it feels slightly more normal and there's less panic. So it really depends on where you are, what kind of lockdown you are.
And are you seeing Chinese citizens publicly criticize the government over their handling of this pandemic?
Yeah, that's been quite interesting because Chinese media are actually reporting that about how quickly the virus is spreading and that the situation is deteriorating. And there's been criticism of the local authorities in Wuhan and how they've been handling it, which is quite unusual in terms of Chinese media being allowed to report such things and not being censored. So that reflects, I think, the deep anger among a lot of Chinese people for how this is being handled. A lot of people are very angry and taking to social media to criticize how the government has been, basically throughout this entire process, has been handling the matter.
So we've seen a lot of travel shut down. You mentioned the Lunar New Year, when normally hundreds of millions of people should be on the move. Imagine many of them are staying at home. What does this virus mean for the Chinese economy?
It's potentially going to have a huge impact. So we saw during the SARS outbreak in 2002 and 2003, China lost about 10 million jobs, and this could arguably have an even bigger impact on both the Chinese and global economies. So, you know, we can obviously see that the Chinese consumer is an even more integral part of the world economy increasingly. And we're already seeing it hitting tourism. Like you mentioned before, countries like Russia are canceling tour groups from China. Philippines is suspending visa upon arrival. Hong Kong is cutting off a lot of connections with the mainland. Even Hong Kong Disney and Hong Kong and Shanghai Disneyland are closed. So that's affecting tourism. And then internally, these are millions of people being locked inside their cities during the busiest travel time of the year. So it's just having a huge impact on tourism and the service sector overall. And that will spill over into other areas as well.
Matt, looking beyond the coronavirus and to pandemics in general, the 2019 Global Health Security Index report found that national health security around the world is weak. What are some of the main reasons for this weakness?
So critical capacities that are needed are things like laboratory capacities, things like enough healthcare workers to be able to respond, pieces like isolation units and beds in hospitals, et cetera, the basics of a healthcare system. And what we see is that there's, you know, most countries around the world are really challenged to have kind of focused on that because it's far easier to worry about a pandemic when it comes rather than become prepared. And that's been a huge, you know, oversight. We've seen kind of for years the United States government, for example, every president since Jimmy Carter has actually seen a major international outbreak. But instead of really getting ahead of things and really creating a global health strategy that's able to respond, you know, as in a holistic way, what we've seen is increasingly just we wait until one pandemic happens and then we respond, and we respond ineffectively. That's got to shift.
And which areas of the world do you think are most vulnerable to pandemics?
So what you see is that low and middle income countries are by far the most vulnerable, right? They're places where there's insufficient numbers of healthcare workers, there isn't the lab capacity, and there isn't the financial capacity to really address that. You know, we've been thinking a little bit about some of those pieces, and what we see is kind of three big things, right? You've seen today's pandemics, AIDS, TB, and malaria continue to be a major problem around the world. They're killing millions. But then you've also got increasingly these new pandemics or new outbreaks that could become pandemics, plus you've got the effects of climate change that are coming through. All of that really needs to be addressed, and yet there's not a kind of coordinated global strategy. There were times when the U.S. played a certain role, but if we look at whether it's Africa or Asia or Latin America, the U.S. role recently has been far, far diminished, and that's actually undermining capacity worldwide.
In a paper that you co-authored at the Journal of International Affairs, it reads, "The oft-repeated reality that diseases know no borders reveals why an approach rooted in international solidarity and multilateralism is needed." To be honest, that doesn't really feel like the U.S. at this very go-it-alone moment. Is this really just a shift during the current administration?
So look, either during the current administration or an administration to come, what we know is that that isolation and walls and borders are just really ineffective, right? Right now, what we're seeing is, you know, attempts at screening at borders, which is, you know, the last worst option when it comes to addressing pandemics. Instead, what we should be talking about is how do we proactively halt pandemics? You know, in that paper, we found the U.S. spends 0.19% of all the budget on pandemic-related global health efforts. And that is tiny. And the Trump administration has been moving every year to try to cut that amount. And so I think a return to a U.S. that is engaged is critically important. And it's going to be the only way that we effectively address pandemics writ large. You know, the least effective strategies are those that are often being deployed at the last minute. The most effective is where we think about the global South, we think about how we stand in solidarity, and we think about what the U.S. role is critically going forward. That's not just financing, it's technical cooperation, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of that is not happening, and that's actually making Americans less safe and people around the world less safe.
Have there been pandemic success stories?
You know, there's a couple, right? And so, you know, we've seen smallpox eradication is one really good example. And again, that was a bit of a global coordinated effort. The response to HIV and AIDS recently has been a success in many ways, although we've recently taken the kind of attention away and the foot off the gas, and now we're seeing in some countries a resurgence of HIV and AIDS. So we need to learn the lessons from those, which is being proactive is far more effective than being reactive when we let things get out of control. You know, frankly, as we did in the 80s with HIV, as we have done on tuberculosis, and now in some ways, right, what we're seeing is a reaction in, to this disease, which is, you know, trying to move after it's out of the gate a little bit. We have a real problem.
Sean, real quick, you're stuck in a hotel room in China. What are you waiting to see from the government in the coming weeks?
How they'll continue handling the outbreak, and whether they can really stem the tide of the spread of the outbreak, and whether when the lockdowns of the cities are going to stop, because eventually, you know, Lunar New Year is going to end and people are going to have to go to work. These are millions of people who are going to have to migrate home and possibly carry the virus with them.
Sean Li is a China-based correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, and Matthew Kavanaugh is director of the Global Health Policy and Governance Initiative at Georgetown University. Thanks to you both. And Sean, stay safe.
Thanks, Arun.
Thanks, Arun.